So the last bit missed it, or am I saying it again? The last bit. So there's different levels of work and different ways of working. So one of them, actually, when I look at the sort of involvements over the last few years, there's been a lot of different involvements, and nearly always with a team. So working with a team is something that's very, something like straightforward in the sense that you're just one of a team and you're just working with the team to make sure we're on the same wavelength or we share the same objectives and we have some idea of strategy. And I'm looking at the strengths in the team and just working out who's good at this, who's good at that. So all of that is something like no problem. And so there's different groups. So there's like JUMP, which is the working with migrants and refugees. It was something like an umbrella group. So there you're bringing together a lot of different political people with a lot of different political backgrounds, all of whom are concerned somehow with refugee and migrants, but actually with very different politics about it. And so actually it's an opportunity to something like be able to gel the group in a way that you can still do work together, even if you share different political viewpoints. And of course, sometimes there'll be a big discussion, and people will get very cross and very angry, because of course we'll be saying it's a capitalist system, and someone else will say, no, capitalism is good. And then, so then the group can very quickly become disunited. And so part of the work is to make sure that that's smoothed out. That we all think, okay, look, we're sharing something like we need. There's certain things we can do, which we share, and it's not going to split the group. And that takes a lot of time because it's a lot of talking to individual people and going and talking them through and listening to them complaining about someone else or me or whatever it is. You know what I mean? So the teamwork side has been fairly same with Little Penang Street Market, same with gender-responsive budgeting. So whatever it is that I'm involved in, actually, that sort of personal teamwork is quite a big part of my work. Information gathering and dissemination is very straightforward. Putting out leaflets, putting out doing websites, et cetera, putting out information. So that's very straightforward. So the difficulty comes when it's direct action, when you need to take direct action, or you want to go somewhere and make a speech to someone, but because you're not Malaysian, then you don't really have the opportunity to do that. So that can be frustrating, but on the other hand, you just have to work it out in a team that someone else does it. And if no one is up for it, then too bad. So there's that side. Then the community side, when you actually work with community, like I say, I mean, not such a good experience with the GRB1, but much, much better experience with the refugee and migrant workers, but especially the refugees. And that's partly because once you've convinced certain people, once people understand where you're coming from in the community, they will very quickly pass a message to everybody else. Because everybody's talking about who are these people coming in, what are they doing, are they Christians, are they not Christian, are they doing this, are they doing that. So they're very, quite understandably, they need to know. So after working with them for a while, getting the trust, hopefully getting the trust of some of them, then they will very quickly pass a message that actually, they're coming from this, it's a campaign, this is what they're trying to do. And so then it's okay now. I feel very comfortable actually working with the community. Very easy.
So, what are you doing? I mean, any group or any specific work that you are doing now?
So I've always had different fingers in different pies. And if you say over the last 10 years, roughly. So a lot of it has been to do with local democracy issues. Much of that is through Swaram. Some of it is to do with, I call it creative economy. It's actually looking at how you invest in people's talents, creative talents. So some people call it arts and culture, but that's got a funny, it's actually about investing in people and utilizing public space and actually supporting the kind of creativity that is in a community. So from my involvement in Little Penang Street Market, actually a few involvements, Little Penang Street Market, Penang Island Jazz Festival, there was something called Penang Jazz Community. So all these things were actually part of a process of trying to involve, well, trying to get an arts policy, trying to get a decent policy from the state government about creativity, which is about arts and culture, but it's much more than that. And partly to create opportunities for people to be able to express themselves. So for example, at Little Penang Street Market, you have open space where anyone can come and perform, do whatever they want. And it's sort of linked into the jazz festival, of course, has a fringe. And then we've suggested over the years, lots of other activities to Georgetown Festival and to other things about making it much more community-based and much more open to anyone. It's not just for the rich people. And there's so much opportunity to do stuff at McCallum Road Flats, for example, or by, you know, you reach out to communities, particularly communities who are not so obviously advantaged, because there's so much creativity that people have and which people should be able to use. And you know, anyway, blah, blah, blah. So there's that sort of side. And actually, and of course, that also recently, we started doing this Penang music heritage stuff. My good friend Paul and me, but helped by many, many people. Because one of the things is that no one knows the history, so it's also about history, just what you're doing, people's history. So people's history is so important. And it just so happened that I was at Penang Island Jazz Festival one year, asking a lot of the young people who were participating in a competition called the Jimmy Boyle Competition. I asked them who Jimmy Boyle was, and they didn't know. Actually, I don't know also, but they also don't know. So it's like, you're in a competition and it's named after this person, but we don't know who it is. So maybe we should find out. So then we started finding out. And then it was like, suddenly, you suddenly realize that actually this is quite an interesting story of Penang's music. Because it fits, of course, it's about Penang society and politics and everything else. So we started doing, Paul and I started doing a lot of documentation, very much in our spare time. It wasn't priority for it. It was always the last thing on the list. But we did a couple of exhibitions and then recently did the book. So that was a very nice project, actually, because it meant a lot of oral history, talking to people, lots of nice research, and it's and great fun to do. We had a really good time doing that. But the serious point of it is that it's about people's history in the same way that, you know, Mostek is about people's history and the Hatal and everything else. And it's people telling it, you know. Paul and I, just like you, we're just facilitators. We just listen to people and then write it down. And then, you know, so that's a nice process. So local democracy, creative economy, stroke musical heritage, migrants and refugees was always something I was interested in. I mean, it's such an obvious thing to be interested in because they are so vulnerable and so unprotected and face so many issues. But when I was working with JUMP, I didn't actually give a huge amount of time to it because I was involved in, I don't know what, actually, a few other things anyway. But I always used to think, you know, actually, if there's one thing I chose to do out of all of these things, it should be migrants and refugees, because hardly anyone is working with migrants and refugees. And like I say, the issues are so terrible. So it came to a point where JUMP actually fell apart because there were too many political divisions. And it was a lot of energy to hold it together, so I gave up, and it fell apart. And we started a Padang Stop Human Trafficking campaign. And so actually a lot of my time now is working, is doing this refugee stuff, especially the refugees. There's so many issues. It's just terrible, and especially now. Suddenly everything, because we've been saying all these things, the refugee and migrants have been saying for years that there's horror camps in Thailand, you know, it's just ridiculous that we've taken it to the authorities time and time again. We've gone to the police, we've gone to whoever we can find and said, look, this is happening, go and... And of course no one does anything because it's all connected. So now, at least, everything is suddenly out in the open. So there's opportunity to really start saying things. But I'm, to be perfectly honest with you, I have no optimism at all. I think if you go 1 year forward, I'm sure nothing will have changed. I'm not sure, but I suspect nothing will change. Because it's too much money.
Too much money on what?
People exploiting people, that human traffickers are very well organized. They will bribe. All the people they need to bribe are bribed already. So it's like when you go to the police, because of the community, the refugee community or the migrant community, actually know everything is happening. They know who the trafficker is, they know what is happening, they know how the thing is, where, how much you pay, all of this. And so we have all that information. But when you take it to the authorities, one is almost sure, but the reason they don't do anything is because actually they're already involved. So it's like, how can you break that? You know what I mean? Unless there's a chain. And Barisan, same, you know, because now a lot of the agents who outsource labor, they're all, I'm no connections, all, you know. There's so many agencies. There's something like 300 and something agents, companies dealing with migrant workers. So much money to be made. Every migrant worker you can do, you make so much money. And they're all connected to UMNO. Or, not all, I mean, take that back. They're not all connected. But, you know, there's so much connection. And so it becomes very difficult to challenge and to unravel it, because everybody in power who's got the power to change a policy is actually involved. So why will they change a policy? Why should they? So much money.
So,
anyway, yes.
What is the next thing you plan to do here?
No plan.
No plan.
Carry on now. Carry on now. I mean, there's so many things. I mean, just on local democracy alone, there's so many issues. And there's actually, local democracy is more interesting in terms of one can see some progress. I think refugee and migrants, it's very, very hard to see how the system is going to change so that they will be given their rights and respected as human beings. But I think for local democracy issues, possibly in Penang, you sort of think, well, you know, certain things have changed. It's not perfect, of course it's not perfect. But I mean, slowly but surely things are opening up a little bit. The participatory budgeting is actually very encouraging in that sense. a few things like freedom of information is not working perfectly, but I mean, as you know, rewind 5 years ago, there was no such thing as freedom of information. So at least you've got something. Now the thing is to make it work. Local elections is ongoing. I can imagine in 5 or 10 years' time, actually, we may well have local elections. If we campaign it correctly. So there's some interesting, that's quite a nice area. It's still hard work, but it's quite nice in the sense that you can see things, certain people are sympathetic within state government or wherever. Creative economy, that whole creativity stuff, I've sort of stopped doing for a while because I just, all the arguments have been made, and I think actually in the end people will understand that you can't just run Georgetown Festival for the rich and famous. That you have to actually involve the community, and you can see already they're beginning to see that and beginning to be a little bit more strategic in how they spend their money in terms of Penang, instead of bringing in very expensive opera from somewhere and then charging very expensive and then free flow of champagne, all this nonsense. But I think they're changing, and I kind of think, yeah. So for the moment, you sort of step back from that and just let see what's happening, and then again, probably in 2 or 3 years, you'll start making arguments again. But yeah, I think the priority now is definitely refugee and migrants and local democracy.
Have you ever regret coming to Malaysia?
No.
No. Why? Because maybe in UK you can have a very different life and
very different, yeah.
More freedom. So
the answer is no, I've never regretted it. And why have I never regretted it is because actually from very young you had one little slogan or something, but you never look back. So you never regret, actually. I mean, it's quite hard. Of course, sometimes you regret doing things. But by and large, you are looking to... It's a little bit existentialist in that you don't have... Because I have no plan in that sense, and no career plan. I didn't have any ambition to be, you know, whatever. So you just deal with things as it comes. And so that means you are something like making decisions without, I mean, you make decisions in a certain framework, of course, but you're not aiming at something for yourself. I mean, you're doing something because you think it's worthwhile and you're making some progress. And it's, so whether it's in America, Canada, Malaysia, actually it doesn't really matter. As long as you feel something's happening. Number one, and number two is this thing about never look back. If you look back and start, I wish I'd done that, and I wish I'd done, energy go out. So don't do it. Never look back, people. Mm. Something like that.
Yes. And what is your hope on your son?
My hope for my son is that he never looks back. My hope for my son is that he is happy. Happy, and I don't, whatever, I mean, happy, it sounds a bit funny, right? Happy. I don't have any hope for my son. In the sense that I don't want him to be, you know, prime minister or chief executive officer of ICI or whatever it is. I just want him to be able to make his own to make decisions that he is confident and happy about. And I am sure he will be something like socially aware, and he won't be selfish and nasty. I'm assuming he won't be. I would not like it if he was selfish and nasty. Yeah. So yeah, so I'm sure you'll find the same thing. One day, if you ever have children, you will, that's all you're doing with children is to try and get them in a situation where they're able to make good decisions, be confident, don't be arrogant, just be confident, and yeah, be socially aware. And if they want to get involved in social issues, that's fine. If he doesn't, actually it's sort of fine as well. Yeah. Up to him. Mm.